Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Young, in for Tiziana Deering. COVID cases are rising again here in Boston, even as we embrace life after the worst of the COVID pandemic. So how concerned do we need to be? And what's next in our struggle with COVID-19? To talk more about that, we're joined by Dr. Ashish Jha, Dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. He previously held the same role at Harvard and recently served as the Biden administration's COVID response coordinator. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Jha.
Good morning. Thanks for having me here.
Glad you are here. So let's get right to it. I want to ask you first about the op-ed that you published in the Boston Globe a little bit earlier this month. It was about the state of COVID, and basically you said that if you stay up to date with your vaccinations and get treated if you get sick, that you really shouldn't have to worry about getting gravely ill or dying. And so first, I want to make sure, is that an accurate description of what you talked about?
It is now. I mean, we are now at a point where most people have immunity against this virus, and therefore the key is keep that immunity up with vaccines, get treated, and you can really avoid serious illness. You can reduce your risk of long COVID. You really can be in a much, much better place.
Okay. And I want to ask, though, about some of the pushback that you got, because there were several letters then written to the Globe, a few got published. Two doctors noted that low vaccination numbers among the entire U.S. population and then also inequitable access to COVID treatments like Paxlovid mean that we're not quite out of the woods yet. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, there are people who have not kept up with their vaccines. I worry about them. There are people who are not accessing treatments. I worry about them. You know, in terms of equity, which is an important lens, when I was in the Biden administration, every single day when we looked at data stratified by race, ethnicity, geography, and did a lot of work to try to make sure that the uptake of these things were equitable. We did well on vaccines. Treatments are available in communities across the country, including poorer communities. So I think equity is always an important angle. But overall, sure, do I worry about people who are not keeping up? Absolutely. And the point of the op-ed was, keep up with the vaccines. Get treated if you need it.
Right. I'm curious, too, is it okay to kind of compare it to the flu now in terms of severity or risk? Or are they both still two very different things?
They're different. The way I think about it is, you know, COVID is not like the flu. COVID is like COVID. It has a few different features. Flu tends to be extremely seasonal. COVID, we're seeing COVID rate cases rising in August. That's not typical of the flu. So COVID, we're probably going to see a couple of waves a year. We have much better treatments for COVID than we do for flu. You know, mortality from COVID is actually, if you were up to date on your vaccines and get treated, is actually lower than your mortality for flu.
So wow, that's interesting.
That's interesting. And that's important. And that's progress, right? In a way that's not. So we have not made that same level of progress, certainly not on treatments for the flu. I mean, we have one treatment for flu that is not as good as the treatments we have for COVID. So they're just different respiratory viruses. They have a lot of similarities, but they also have important differences.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting. New to me information, at least. I also want to ask, you know, COVID's been very much a part of our lives. We've been talking about it, maybe not so much a little earlier this summer, but definitely now. But how do we get into a better mental state about, you know, maybe it not being an emergency now? How do we think about that, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's not an emergency at this moment, but it is an ongoing issue that we need to deal with. I think of this as it has now become one of the respiratory viruses that we need to deal with. It'll be around forever. We have to manage it smartly. What does that mean? Again, the stuff I've talked about, vaccines, treatments. If we can do those things, obviously trying to make other efforts to reduce the risk of infection, improving indoor air quality, wearing masks in crowded indoor spaces. There are things that we can do to keep infection numbers lower, and then making sure that people get infected, they really are in better shape.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about long COVID for the people that are affected by that? You know, some of the symptoms are really debilitating: brain fog, shortness of breath. Do we know any more about what that is and how to treat it?
Yeah, it's a very good question and an important thing. I mean, first and foremost, I will say long COVID is a real thing. It is very debilitating. Thankfully, if you're updated on your vaccines, your risk of getting serious long COVID is relatively low. We know vaccines lower that risk, but it's not zero. Long COVID is probably not one condition. It's probably a constellation of different diseases. There's a lot we're still learning. For some people, it may be persistent virus. For other people, it's autoimmune. There's a lot of work being done to try to both understand it, but also treat it. And then the other thing we have to do is we have to take people who have been really debilitated, make sure we're giving them support, making sure they're getting medical care, doing what we can while the science catches up and teaches us what this is and how to treat it.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the newest variant, Eris, EG5, right? So it seems to be an offshoot of that very contagious Omicron variant. What else should we know about this new one, though?
Yeah. So EG5, I wrote a tweet a couple of days ago, basically said I'm not excessively worried about it. I'm not. It's a version of XBB.1.5. There are all these crazy letters, and I apologize. It's just the nomenclature we use. EG5 has a few more changes. The big thing I would say to folks is this is completely expected. The virus is continuing to evolve. We are going to see new and new variants every 3 to 6 months. And the question when I see a new variant is it a lot more contagious? Is it more deadly? Are our treatments going to work? Are our vaccines going to work? When I look at those questions against EG5, I'm not super concerned. Is it a new variant? Yep. Are we going to see more new variants? Yes. We got to keep tracking them. And obviously, if one of them is really different, if it will escape our vaccines, if it's make our treatments not effective, that will be the moment we need to sound the alarm, say we've got a real problem. EG5 is not that.
Okay. Can you reflect a little bit more, too, on the evolution of variants? Is it something that goes in a trend line of less deadly, or does it kind of depend on how it mutates?
It really, unfortunately, depends. You know, there is this myth out there that viruses evolve to become less deadly over time. Boy, do I wish that was true. That would be lovely. Just turns out not to be the case. There have been instances where viruses have evolved to be less deadly. There are instances where viruses have evolved to be more deadly. What the virus cares about, to the extent that the virus cares about anything, is not whether it's more deadly or less deadly. What it cares about is how transmissible is it? Is it able to transmit? If it's able to transmit, it's going to dominate. And so we have been, I think, lucky that, you know, Omicron has tended to be a little bit less deadly. But we saw from the original to Delta, Delta was more deadly than the original. So I don't know that I know for certain what's going to happen next. What I also do know is that as people build up immunity, as people build up their immunity, ideally through vaccines, we're going to be able to handle viruses more effectively.
All right. We're talking about the recent rise in COVID cases and what we can expect from the new variant with Dr. Ashish Jha, the Dean of Brown University's School of Public Health and the former White House COVID Response Coordinator. The next question I have for you is about how the summer impacts how this new variant is going to act. I know in the flu, it's the winter, we're all indoors, you know, there's just more contact with people. Is a rise in a variant better to happen in the summer, if that's not the right word, but yeah.
I mean, so we have tended to see that during summers, the waves, the peaks tend to be lower, certainly in the northern half of the country, right? In the south, the summer is really brutally hot, particularly, and that's the thing with climate change, we're going to see hotter and hotter summers. What that means is people are spending more and more time indoors in the South. It's very hard to be outdoors.
Yeah, that's a great point. I used to live in Phoenix, and it was the opposite for us. You spent all summer indoors.
Exactly. And so right now, we have seen that in a lot of the southern states, we've seen a lot more transmission. Typically during the summer, we see a lot more transmission in the South, but we've seen a good amount here in the New England because people still spend some time indoors, obviously. But in general, summer waves, to the extent that we have waves in the summer, they tend to be lower. Winter, more indoors, more contact, more socializing. There's a bunch of reasons. And actually, colder, drier air also makes it a little easier for the virus to transmit. Variety of reasons why the winter tends to be deadlier.
Okay. And I'm going to shift topics just slightly. You are just returning to the area after serving as the Biden administration's COVID response coordinator. So you've seen this transition and, you know, as being firmly in the pandemic and now trying to return to pre-pandemic life, can you talk about your experience in the administration and also returning to life now as a civilian?
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of things. I mean, first of all, as you might imagine, it was an extraordinary privilege to get to work at the White House on the biggest public health challenge we've faced in a century. And every single day, I pinched myself when I walked in through the North Gate, walked into the West Wing of the White House. I just couldn't quite believe I had this opportunity to serve the American people. It was extraordinary. And it was an opportunity to get our country – I have actually never thought the goal was to get us to our pre-pandemic life. It was to get us to the post-emergency phase.
Okay.
Right? Pandemics – like the goal is not to go back, in my mind, to 2019. It's to make 2023, 2024 as good as it can be. There are a lot of lessons we've learned in the pandemic. I want to keep those lessons. I want to make sure we lean in on those. But we do need to return to a more normal way of life. Like, we can't be in an emergency phase forever. There are a lot of other public health issues that we need to address. The opioid crisis that was being discussed earlier. Mental health issues. Just the decline in life expectancy. There are critical public health challenges that we have to face. And COVID needs to be a part of that conversation, but it can't dominate the way it has.
Right. I want to ask you, too, what do you feel like is the biggest success from your time with the administration?
Well, there are a couple of things that I think have happened. I mean, first of all, this happened before my time, but obviously Operation Warp Speed was extraordinary in building very, very fast vaccines, very high quality vaccines very quickly. There were a lot of things that we worked on. Again, one of the things I mentioned earlier, constantly focusing on equity to make sure that vaccine uptake was equitable, that treatment uptake was equitable. One of the things was that there was a lot of innovation. Like, one of the things that I'm most proud of is the work that happened around test to treat. You know, typically, if you have a respiratory virus, you got to go into the doctor's office, wait in the waiting room, probably infect four other people, and then maybe you get a prescription, maybe you don't. Test to treat is a new way of thinking about things where you can get – you test at home and you get treated at home. Or there are mobile vans that go out into communities. That is the kind of innovation we want to see, not just for COVID. I want to see that happening for all respiratory viruses. I want to see that happening for more diseases. So there were really interesting new things that we were able to do, in some ways spurred on by the pandemic. But as we get out of the emergency phase, my hope is we can keep those things and make them much more normal part of life.
Right. A few good lessons learned, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to continue our conversation about this recent spike in COVID-19, especially cases here in Boston. We were just talking with Dr. Ashish Jha, the dean of Brown University's School of Public Health. Also with us for this conversation are two local infectious disease experts. Dr. Sabrina Asumu is an infectious disease physician at the Boston Medical Center and a professor of medicine at Boston University. Hi, Dr. Asumu.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. And also with us is Dr. Shira Daron. She is the chief infection control officer and an epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Daron, hi.
Wonderful to be back with you.
Okay, so we just heard from Dr. Ashish Jha moments ago talking about, what we can expect from this recent variant and the wave. What are you guys seeing in your individual medical centers? What are you seeing at Tufts and Boston? So Dr. Asumu, I'll let you go first.
So first of all, it was actually very nice to hear Dr. Jha and hear his perspective and what he's been describing. So first of all, my big message is we're in a very different place than we were in 2020. You know, a lot of us who were on the wards in 2020, we saw a lot of patients who were being admitted who had very severe disease. This is not the case now, right? The people who are getting hospitalized are not as sick as they used to be. And we actually have treatments that we can give patients to help them feel better. So for that reason, I would say that we're in a very different place. We're not being inundated. So this is actually very good news.
Great. Okay. Yeah. As Dr. Asumu just says, we're not being inundated. Dr. Daron, what would you say? What are you seeing inside hospitals? Are staff being as strained as they were?
Well, you know, there are staffing shortages in hospitals, but they're no longer a direct consequence of COVID illness. We have three COVID patients at Tufts Medical Center. To put that into context, you know, we've been running between zero and three since about May. We had our first zero day in May. So, you know, if you think about, you know, a day when we have one and then the next day we might have two, that is 100% increase. And so I do want to point out that a lot of the headlines out there are talking about the percent increase in hospitalizations. That's probably not the best way to present data when the numbers are quite small. And if you think about the state numbers, you know, the state's reporting about 212 COVID hospitalizations. And yes, that's 100% increase compared to a month ago. But I want to compare it to 1,200 in January and 3,200 the January before and 3,800 in April 2020. So again, like Dr. Asumu said, and like Dr. Jha has said, we are in a much better place. And this is a very manageable state that we're in right now.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like statistics need context. It's not that they lie, but they need context to fully understand them. That's really interesting. Dr. Asumu, what types of symptoms are you seeing the most with how this new variant manifests itself?
I mean, I would say, you know, we're seeing the same symptoms that we were seeing before, respiratory symptoms. Patients are coughing or they have a fever. People who are getting hospitalized are, you know, sicker than the people who are in the outpatient. But I would say the symptoms are actually very similar to what we used to see before.
Okay. And Dr. Derone, what about vaccination levels from patients, even booster shot levels? Is that, I guess we'll start that broad. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, most of the patients that we're seeing in the hospital are vaccinated and, a large proportion of them are boosted. But that's because we're lucky that in Massachusetts, most people are vaccinated and boosted. But most of the people who are severely ill from COVID in the hospital have multiple comorbidities. They are at the extremes of age. I note that in the state data on COVID deaths, the average age of COVID death over the last 2 weeks is 85. Not that we want our 85-year-olds in Massachusetts to be dying of COVID, but we are not seeing what we saw in 2020, which is younger, healthier people ending up in the hospital and dying of COVID.
Okay. And also, Dr. Derone, I want to ask you, you've recently advocated for us to finally drop this 5-day isolation period following a positive COVID test. And you've noted that other countries have done this already, adopted this sort of feel sick, stay home approach. So why do you think that we're lagging in those rules? And why do you feel like right now is the time to make that switch?
Well, I mean, I think these are very difficult decisions. You know, right now, what I think that we have is a disconnect between the guidelines for testing and isolation and our ability to fund or willingness, I suppose, to fund free testing. And so we're now expecting people to continue to test even with mild symptoms and then to isolate for 5 days for a positive COVID test while not providing those free tests for most people. Although I will mention that, you know, there are still ways to get free tests, certainly plenty of ways to get those free tests. So if we shifted, as the state of Oregon has done and as many countries have done, to more of a stay home when sick model, like we do for flu, which also can be contagious for a week, like we do for RSV, which also can be contagious for a week, then we might be able to kind of reallocate and redistribute those testing resources toward people who really need to test because they would benefit most from Paxlovid, or people who really need to test because they're regularly exposed to people who are more high risk.
All right. We're talking about the recent rise in COVID cases here in Boston. Just speaking was Dr. Shira Derone, the Chief Infection Control Officer and Epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, also here in the studio, is Dr. Sabrina Asumu, Infectious Disease Physician at Boston Medical Center. But I want to bring Dr. Ashish Jha back into the conversation and ask you the same question that I did Dr. Derone about this feel sick, stay home approach and if we should make that switch right now.
It's a good question. I know the CDC has been looking at this. The way I think about this is, look, I mean, COVID still continues even today with things being so much better. Infect more people, harm more people than any other respiratory virus. And what we know is that after you get infected, after you test positive, you are most contagious for the first 5 days or so. And so to me, it's still very prudent to stay home in that time period. Obviously, it's important to look at these policies on an ongoing basis. I think the CDC and we in the administration, when I was there, pulled back on a lot of the things that we were doing initially, a lot of the mandates. But to me, it's still important to isolate for that time period, just to reduce the amount of spread you're having. And therefore, I think it's a perfectly fine policy to keep for now. I can imagine at some point down the road that might change. But at this point, I don't particularly feel like it's critical that we change this policy.
Okay. Dr. Asumu, one thing I've been curious about is, you know, I've seen a lot of friends in my circle who have recently gotten COVID. It was their first time getting it. They avoided it all during the, you know, really hard days of the pandemic, but now are getting it. Do we know why that is? Because I've heard that from a number of people.
Yeah, it's funny that you're mentioning it. I actually personally have friends also who, you know, were safe for 3 years and then just got infected with this current wave. I think one thing to remember is that the virus is looking for newer people to infect. And we do know that this newer subvariant, the AG5, has what we call a growth advantage. So meaning it's going to overtake, and it's overtaking some of the other ones. So, you know, if you have more virus in the community, some of us are sort of maybe using less precaution than we were. It's the summer. We're having fun. We're traveling. So I think we're just giving the virus more opportunities to infect, and that's what we're seeing.
Interesting. Okay. And what is your advice, Dr. Asumu, for people as we start to transition into the fall and then into the winter?
Yeah, no, actually, thank you for mentioning this. I think that we just need to remind the public, you know, of the lessons that we've learned during this pandemic. Number one, be up to date with your vaccinations. You know, when the new vaccine is proposed, follow the guidelines and get vaccinated as soon as you're eligible. If you get infected, please contact your health professional as soon as possible to see if you're eligible for Paxlovid. Paxlovid works, but it needs to be administered during those 5 days. So it's really critical that you get help really early on. Get tested if you have symptoms. Improve ventilation. Like if you have an opportunity to do an activity either indoors or outdoors is probably safer. And then if you're at high risk for complications, consider wearing a mask in indoor public settings. So again, the lessons are the same. We may have a new subvariant, but just keeping up with those lessons is what is going to keep us safe when we are getting to the next stage.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Dr. Ashish Jha, Dean of the Brown University School of Public Health and former COVID response coordinator for the Biden administration. Dr. Sabrina Asumu, who was just speaking, an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of medicine at Boston University. And Dr. Shira Daron, chief infection control officer and an epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks for joining the show today, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.